Let's take a look at the first three of the eight epigenetic influences that we're going to take a look at in the prenatal period. The age of parents, the stresses our dams experience, and the fears that the parents may have. We'll start by looking at the effect of parents' age on their offspring. We call this the tale of telomeres. These purple things are chromosomes. Every dog has 39 pairs that are found in every cell in their body except the eggs and sperm, which only have one copy of each. Dogs have quite a few more chromosomes than people, who have only 23 pairs, so our dogs can be more varied in structure, which is pretty obvious when you take a look at them. Each chromosome consists of coiled-up DNA wrapped around proteins, so the purple stuff is a long string of DNA on which sit our dog's genes. The red tips on these chromosomes are telomeres. Let's take a look at a little bit more information about this very important part of our dogs and our DNA.
Elizabeth Blackburn currently runs a laboratory at the University of San Francisco in California. She pioneered the study of telomeres, or the tips of chromosomes, which has since become an important field of science, advancing the development of cancer treatments and our knowledge of aging.
We think of the telomere as being a little bit like the little cap or the tip at the end of a shoelace. So if you think of the chromosome as the shoelace, and then there's two little tips at the end, and those seal off the ends and protect.
Blackburn grew up in Australia, and after completing her PhD, she was keen to find out more about chromosomes, in particular, the ends. In the 1970s, very little was known about telomeres.
There was no sort of formula for how one could do this, so I had to make it up. And so, you know, every day was an adventure because you didn't know which one was going to be working, and then sometimes you'd get a result.
Her work showed that telomeres were actually a repeating DNA sequence. This revealed the genetic structure of the telomere for the first time.
I remember taking the X-ray film out of the fixer, having developed the film, and holding it up against this, you know, dim red light in the dark room and seeing this very, very intense spot that immediately told me that there was a particular sequence. So right away I got a lot of information, and I knew right away there was something really worth looking at. And, you know, little did I know I'd spend the next 30 years of my life or more looking at this same kind of DNA.
When DNA replicates, the very end of the chromosome cannot be copied, so falls away and disintegrates. Blackburn's discovery showed that the telomere sequence didn't contain DNA that was crucial to the cell. Therefore, no essential genetic information is lost during the process. The telomere sequence is simply to protect the chromosomes from damage and is otherwise redundant.
So as you heard, the longer the telomere, the more times the cell can safely divide, and the longer the organism is likely to live. Once the telomere is gone, first the cell and then the animal dies. In dogs, people, birds, and many other species, longer telomeres are directly related to longevity. And conversely, shorter ones typically mean shorter lives. Telomere length is highly heritable, with a heritability of 0.7. And if you're not very familiar with heritability scores, that's really high. And it means that most of the variation in telomere length is inherited. So what increases telomere length? First off, it's strongly correlated with a mother's telomere length. So moms with longer telomeres produce offspring with longer telomeres, irrespective of her age. But father's age has an even larger impact. Recent research in people has shown that older semen produces offspring with longer telomeres, and thus those offspring are then more likely to live longer. Now note, this isn't the age of the father himself, it's the age of the father when the semen is produced. So the kid of an older father will be more likely to have longer telomeres than her brother who was born, say, 10 years earlier. Assuming that this carries over to dogs, older dogs will produce pups with longer telomeres than that same dog would have when he was younger. So if we're breeding to older dogs but we're using their semen that was frozen years ago, we may not be getting the positive benefits of those dogs' longevity. So how can we use these findings in dogs? Well, if longevity is of interest to you, you want pups out of a mom that from long-lived lines that was bred to an older male. Now, obviously, there are challenges when using older sires, specifically fertility issues. Older dogs usually aren't as fertile, if they're breeding at all. But if you can find those boys who are still siring litters at 11 or 12, use them or get puppies from them if your breeding is facing longevity challenges. And consider freezing semen on stud dogs. Since dogs can go sterile without much warning, you may want to freeze them every year, say at 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. And assuming you have good quality collections, use them older to younger. So first the semen collected when he was 7, then 6, then 5, etc. Now you might be thinking, oh my gosh, Gail, my dog sire was only 2 when she was born. What can I do? Well, luckily, there are other ways to increase telomere length by activation of an enzyme called telomerase. Things that have been shown to increase this enzyme include a good diet, especially one that's not highly processed. It's based on whole foods and it's high in antioxidants. Always, exercise and fitness really matter. Low stress, particularly during pregnancy and beyond. And then recently found in birds, low inbreeding. So even if your dog has a young dad, you can do things to try to increase your dog's telomere length through the care that you provide them. Now, the effects of mother's age varies across species. In most cases, the youngest mother produces offspring with the lowest longevity. However, these are very young mothers, which few well-bred dogs have. I expect that in dogs, this would be bitches bred on their first heat. If instead we take a look at the other end of age, older mothers offer a more complicated picture. First off, older dog moms have lower fertility, so they're less likely to get pregnant, and if they do, they have smaller litters. In many animals, older mothers produce offspring that develop more slowly, but end up physically larger. So if size is an issue in your lines, you may want to consider this in deciding when to breed your bitches. And finally, in many species, older dog moms produce longer lifespans of both mother and offspring. Now, having babies later doesn't make moms live longer. Instead, it's an indication of vitality. A dam that can have and raise a baby later in life may be more vigorous and healthy than those that cannot. Again, these are things to consider if longevity is an issue in your breed. Now let's talk about stress. The amount of stress a dam experiences while pregnant may have a lifelong impact on her pups. Now, there's two types of stress. Good stress, usually from enriching activities that give the dog pleasurable challenges. And distress, or bad stress, from things that cause the dog extreme anxiety. We can't always avoid all distress in our dogs, but the balance should be heavily weighted towards eustress. Now, I'm sure you've heard about issues with stress and how they impact our bodies and brains. Well, it's the same with other species, mice, rats, primates, and our dogs. Stress impacts the dog's brain, which in turn releases neurochemicals through nerve pathways. Remember back to Module 2, these neural connections linked to the rest of the body, and they do it through what's known as the HPA axis, or hypothalamus pituitary adrenal complex. If the brain perceives distress, it releases cortisol and adrenaline and other key chemicals. Now, this is the right approach if, say, the dog's distress is truly something bad, a bear walking through the backyard or a burglar breaking into the house. But if that distress is an innocuous common event, say, walking into training class, then the dog's response is inappropriate. Functional HPA axes are those that can respond to stress appropriately. Not too much, not too little. If a dog responds too much to stress, we often label them as reactive or excitable. They might overreact to things that really aren't threats, or once they've reacted, they can't get themselves back under control. Both of those are dysfunctional responses. Not only do those reactions affect the dog and its owner's quality of life, but there's evidence that they might also limit the dog's health and ultimately longevity. Dr. David Waters found in the Old Gray Muzzle Tour study on longevity in Rottweilers that the longest-lived dogs had been afraid of few things in their lives, not thunder, not fireworks, they don't mind going to the vets, things like that. And they had a lower than normal level of cortisol. So what do we call these dogs who handle stress well? Bomb-proof. We may not know the exact relationship yet in dogs, but being bomb-proof is somehow also related to mental stability, general well-being, and longer lives. And we may not be able to make every dog bomb-proof simply by how we raise them, but we can make every effort to get them closer. And one of the ways we can do that is through maternal stress levels. If the life of a dam includes good stress or enrichment in the form of work and activity that she enjoys, her positive hormones will be stimulated, which in turn stimulates similar chemicals in her puppies, so the pups will handle stress better. And the better they can handle stress, the lower their cortisol, the healthier they will be as adults, and the healthier their kids and grandkids. Pups whose mother experienced eustress during pregnancy are more likely to be calmer, learn more quickly, have better digestive and immune systems, have more stable emotions, which in dogs typically means less aggression, breed better, and use their energy better. Conversely, bad stress on a dam during pregnancy, both mental and physical, actually threatens the pup's development, survival, temperament, and possibly lifetime health. The pups of mother rats that were exposed to prenatal distress during pregnancy ended up with epigenetic changes in their brains, specifically at the receptor for the stress hormone cortisol. These pups showed increased anxiety and poorer stress responses in adulthood, including higher than average levels of cortisol. In studies in a number of species, including people, maternal stress is linked to offspring that are more likely to be hyperreactive and take longer to return to normal following exposure to both acute and prolonged stressors. Mild impairment of intellectual activity and behavior disorders are also common, including hyperactivity, anxiety, shorter attention spans, and higher irritability. Irritability in dogs is a real problem since that usually results in more aggression. In addition, researchers at the University of Pennsylvania found that distress changes a mother's microbiome, that the trillions of bacteria that live in our bodies and aid us in so many ways. We're going to talk more about the microbiome in a bit, but for now, let's just see the effects of distress on it. In this study, too much stress caused changes in the mother rat's vaginal flora or microbiome. This caused her pup's microbiome to be abnormal, which in turn altered the normal development of their brain. However, all of this doesn't mean that our dog mom should live a life with no stress. A little stress through a challenging maternal environment actually enhances the pup's HPA axis. So remember, for our dogs, when we long for a life without difficulties, remind us that oaks grow strong in contrary winds and diamonds are made under pressure. Bitches need some challenge through training, problem solving, an enriched environment, or more, but not too much. So a breeder's job is to find the balance, to give her lots of work, activity, affection, enrichment, but not to create physical or mental distress. And we must always remember that stress is in the eyes of the dog. You may think something shouldn't be stressful, but if the bitch says it is, it is. Now let's talk about a specific kind of stress, fear. Parental temperaments also influence their pups both genetically and epigenetically. The line of timid or nervous pointers show how strongly that shy, fearful temperaments can be inherited in dogs. This line of pointers was carefully bred since the 1960s, so researchers can evaluate the influence of genetics on temperament. Bred from two pairs, scientists consistently selected the most timid and least timid dogs to breed so that they could compare them. These temperaments have bred true since the very first matings. The timid dogs appear normal in many ways, playing with other dogs, breeding naturally, raising their puppies normally. But when they're exposed to people or to loud noises, their reactions are over the top. They hyper-startle, they freeze, strongly avoid people even if they'd been hand-raised and spent a tremendous amount of time socializing. They even become catatonic, urinate, and defecate. A wide array of experiments were conducted on these two sets of pointers, with the final conclusion that temperament, at least in this case, was strongly inherited. So this is the genetic side of fear, and the one that underlies the guidance to breeders and owners that they select dogs with stable, confident temperaments for breeding. But what of the epigenetic influences on fears? So, you've probably guessed, acquired fears can also be passed on from parents and even grandparents of pups. Normal mice who are not typically afraid of the odor of acetophenone, an organic chemical, got a mild foot shock when the smell was present. Both male and female mice were conditioned until they were afraid of the smell. The males were then bred via artificial insemination, never meeting either the mother or the pups. And yet their offspring were more sensitive to and afraid of the odor as adults, and they then passed that fear on to their offspring. The conditioned females were also bred, and their kids and grandkids were afraid of acetophenone if their mom was conditioned prior to being bred. However, if she was conditioned after being bred, even while pregnant, her pups weren't afraid of the odor unless she was exposed to it while she was caring for the pups. Researchers have found epigenetic effects of post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, in humans. So there's a good possibility that acquired fears in dogs can also be passed on to descendants. So selecting breeding stock based on temperament and continually monitoring them for acquired fears may be essential to producing the most stable pups possible.